with who they're gonna give it to personally, you know. I wish that these students would speak up.
Well,
they're in the stock. If they're shareholders, yeah, they should speak out what they feel in their mind.
Well, I suppose there are some families in on Alaska where the children who are 14 and 15 hold shares and the children who are 9 and 10 don't hold shares. I suppose that must be true here. If it is, I'd like maybe some of the students could tell me about it. Maybe you might just pass the microphone along the back row there, Mary, and just see if anyone would like to chat.
Hey, I'm Denise Rankin. I live here, and I'm a shareholder, and I don't know anything about this.
Mm-hmm. Well, you are a shareholder, so you have shares. You may not know anything about this, and sometimes that's the feeling I have about it, but do you ever go to meetings of the corporation in which you have shares?
I don't know. Once. I just did once.
I see. And was there any particular reason why you went that time?
Well, I had to go with my mom.
Oh, I see. Well, I guess that's a pretty good reason. Well, what do you think about the fact that children like yourself that were born before December 18th, 1971 have 100 shares, and children who have born after that don't have any? Do you think that's okay, or do you have any comment on it?
No, because I have a younger brother and he doesn't have any shares. And I think he should get some.
I see. Right. Well, maybe you could just pass the microphone on. Yes, ma'am, would you?
Irene McGlashan. I think the children that were born after 1971 should get shares. Because I work with Alaska Legal Services, and I had parents try to will shares to like about 10 children, and the shares get smaller and aren't worth anything. And I don't think the native people should lose their land. They've been here a lot longer than anyone else. And there should be something done for the older people. I guess that's all I had.
Yeah, just you're a shareholder.
Yes, for a village corporation and a the Aleut Corporation, the Akitan, and Kinko.
Let me ask you this. What do you think of the corporation setup itself that was established under ANCSA. Do you think it's worked out well, or we've been talking about 1991 and all the things that could lead to the corporations falling into the control of other people, but right now those corporations are controlled by Native people. What do you think about the way the corporations have worked out?
I think if they trained somebody to handle the money and the corporations, it would have worked out a lot better. They put people in there as presidents that didn't know what was going on or what they were supposed to be there for.
I asked you what whether you were a shareholder, and you told me, and someone was handing me a note, and I missed it. You're a shareholder here, are you?
No, Akatan and King Cove.
Akatan and King Cove. Well, are you a share in the? Are you a shareholder in the Aleut Regional Corporation?
Yes.
And have you received dividends from the regional corporation?
Yes.
And you're working. You are working for Alaska Legal Services.
Yes, I am working for Alaska Legal Services, and have been trying to do wills for all the Native people that have shares. But my problem was money, getting to village, it's so expensive out here. I realized the importance of the wills, those that hold shares.
Yeah. But you live here in Unalaska
now?
Yes.
I'm a paralegal. I work here as a paralegal.
Yeah. Right. Well, thanks. Would the lady next to you like to say something? Mr. Swanson, maybe, Mr. Swanson, we could ask you to come up to the front and talk a little bit about the history of this area. Well, ancient and modern. We've got all these students. We might as well try to educate them while they're here.
Well, I don't know what they could say about this. Let's see. What is it you want to know now?
Well, maybe you could... tell us, sir, about what you remember of the land claims movement here on the Unalaska and the Aleutians in the old days, and how it got started, and what people were trying to do when they tried to get a land claim settlement back before ANCSA, and how they... how you feel it's all worked out. If you'd like to come to the front and sit here, then we could all see you a little better. Yeah, that'll be fine, sir.
Well, you could go ahead and ask questions.
Okay, I'll do that.
And I'll answer them.
Well, maybe you could tell me how long you've lived in this region.
Well, I was born here in 1895.
Well, we've all done a little arithmetic and figured that out.
Well, 90 is close enough. And I was gone from here from 1910 till 1920.
Well, you must have seen a lot of changes here.
Well, I've seen, this was a native village up till the war.
About how many people lived here then?
Maybe 200,
and
counting children and all.
How did they make their living?
They were subsistence. They lived off the land, mostly.
Hunting and fishing?
Hunting and fishing.
What kind of game did they get around here?
Well, there was... foxes was the only game that they made a few bucks off of. And they used to make some money off of sea otter hunting. But that was discontinued after 1910. So that is the Canadians and Russians and Japs and Americans couldn't hunt fur seals or sea otters, and fur seals and sea otters. That included the residents here.
I see.
So they lost most of their income at that time.
And then when the war came along, did they get jobs here at all these?
Oh, yeah. They had jobs. Some of them worked for the construction company. And but from then on, the subsistence living, that is, living off the land, ceased.
Besides fur, what did they get on the land? Moose or what to eat?
Well, there was ducks and geese, fish. Everybody had a rack full of dried fish those days, and no more now. Mm-hmm. Well, they had to, because they had no income. They had no money.
Yeah.
So they had to live off the land.
During the war, there were a lot of people here, I take it.
Well, the Aleuts were evacuated. And there are a lot of troops here.
And when were the, were you evacuated too?
Oh, no, I was with the army.
Oh, I see. In
42, 43, and 44.
Well, if you hadn't been with the army, would you have been evacuated?
Well, if I wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Did they bring the people back then, right after the war?
Yeah, in 45 they come back.
And did you leave the army then in return, or?
Well, I wasn't exactly in the army, I was civilian.
So you were here in town?
No, I was all over the Aleutians from here to that too with the army.
Oh, I see.
I run the outpost tender for them because I knew the country. You know, there was no charts or anything, no good ones. And I was too old to enlist in the army. So they kept me as a civilian.
Before the war, what did you do for a living? Were you subsistence?
No, I fished in Bristol Bay. And then there the fox ranching was big on the Aleutian Islands during the 20s and 30s.
What, after the war, when the army left, what happened here? How did people make a living after that?
This was the poorest place in the world, I think, for a while there.
Why was that?
Well, there was nothing here. There are no jobs, no industry, no nothing.
Well, they still had fish around here, didn't they?
Yeah, but there was subsistence fishing. There was no commercial fishing.
And how long did those bad times last when this was such a poor place?
Let's see. See, the people came back here in 45. There was nothing here for them. There wasn't, that is, to make a living. 45, and then, huh?
Around 55, the cannery up there started.
Oh, yeah. Then, yeah, for about 10 years, there was nothing here. If you wanted to earn a few dollars, you had to go away from here, down to King Cove or here and there, and some went to Pribilofs to help in the seal harvest, fur seal harvest. Then about, what year was it, 55, you say?
Yeah,
50. Then they started the canneries and stuff, started to be interested here. Then in the 60s, the big fishing outfits came here, for the king crab and so forth.
And do you remember whether there was a native land claims movement down here back in the 60s? It was, were people talking about land claims? Was
Let's see, that started in 71, didn't it?
Well, that's when Congress passed the law, but before that, were people holding meetings about land claims, or was anybody trying to do something about it?
Not that I know of.
Well, when the ANCSA, the land claims statute, was passed by Congress, what did people think it was going to do for them? How did they feel about it?
Well, let's see, where was I? That was in 71, huh? Or 71. I don't know. Nobody ever discussed it that I know of.
I see. Well, are you a shareholder?
Oh, yes.
In the local?
Aleut Corporation and also in the village, Unalaska.
Right. Well, then, at some point or other, the federal government sent you some shares, or the corporation sent you some shares and said you're now a member of the corporation. You've got 100 shares.
Yeah. Well, we were told we had 100 shares. Whether we had them or not, I don't know, because we didn't get any paper or anything.
Yeah. Well, what did you think this was all going to do? What was the purpose of it, so far as you yourself, Mr. Swanson, were concerned?
Well, let's see. Now, I never did think much of but it was like being given a gift, more or less. Like when the Navy moved off of Mucknack Island. Gee, what year was that? Let's see. Anyhow, when the army moved out of here, they just moved out and left, like up the valley here and all over. But the Navy still kept Dutch Harbor or Mucknack Island. Then about 19, they were going to sell it to the highest bidder and so forth and so on. And then that was stopped. Then the Navy gave it to the Unalaska Corporation.
Well, How do you feel this land claims thing has worked out? And how do you feel about this whole question of whether or not people should sell their shares? And
well, I think it's up to the people, not to the individual. Because when that time comes, I don't think I'll be here.
Well, I think you seem to be in very good shape to me. I think you've got as good a chance as most of us of being here. If you're here in 1991, do you think you'd sell your shares? What would you do?
Well, no, I don't think I would. Of course, if I needed the money, I would. It all depends.
Well, if you didn't need the money, you wouldn't sell them, but is there any particular reason why you wouldn't sell them?
Well, I wouldn't... want to disturb the corporation, you know, by dividing up all the shares.
Mary, do you have some questions you'd like to?
Well, Mr. Swanson, when you received your shares, when you received your shares, did you ever after that attend any kind of a corporation meeting?
Let's see. No, I don't think I did.
So they really haven't meant much to you?
No, they didn't. Well,
Unalaska has changed a lot, you said, since when you were first here.
Oh, yeah.
What would you like to see happen in the future, given the way that things are now?
Well, I don't think you could change what's happening. See, it was, well, this was an Aleut village. And inside of a year, or it went from an Aleut village of about 200 up to city first class in 1942. You ever heard of anything like that happening?
We have
now.
Pretty
drastic change.
Yeah, from a little village of 200 people to first-class city, which would be same as New York or any of them.
Yeah.
So you had to have a mayor, city manager, police force. In fact, I was a police force for a couple of years, all by myself. Well, the town had no money. They couldn't pay anybody. Everybody worked for free. And I was available, so I was a police force for about 2 years. Then I had to, I was a city engineer for a couple of years too. Done a lot of work for free.
You said that you can't change what's happened.
No.
And that's true. If you could turn the clock back or turn it ahead, what would you like to see, or what changes do you wish had never happened? Let's put it that way.
Well, it would. It was nice when it was a nice little Aleut village before the war, you know.
Yeah.
It was real good.
Mr. Swanson, do you have any advice for them?
Well, no, you can't give young people any advice. They're already gonna do what they're gonna do.
Well, let's.
Uh, Mr. Swanson, next year you told me that you'll be 90 years old.
Well, I'm going on 90 now.
What will you do with the shares that you have?
Well, I never done any thinking about it. Well, I got them I got a couple of grandnieces live in Kodiak. That they're my, they'll inherit the my shares. Mm-hmm.
Right here in town. You live right here in town.
Oh, yes.
Who owns the land that your house is built on? Is that your land?
Mm-hmm.
Is that land that you bought, or how did you come to own it?
Well, I bought it, in the 30s. I bought it from, I think it was a Norwegian fisherman, mm-hmm. fishing in Bristol Bay.
Mm-hmm. Was this a native town site? That is, were there lots under the Native Town Site Act back in the 30s, or?
Well, now, nobody owned any land here till 1938. Even if you lived here for 100 years, you still didn't own the land you lived on. That is, you had no title to it.
Yeah. You didn't have a piece of paper.
Unless you had it fenced in. Mm-hmm. So in 1938, they gave deeds to the people. Whoever happened to be living on that piece of land, he got a deed to that lot. And natives got restricted deeds on their lots.
Right.
Well, right now, the corporation owns most of the land around here.
You mean in the town itself?
And around the town.
Oh, yes. They mm-hmm. own all of Amucknack Island, which the Navy gave to them. I don't know if the Navy had the right to give it, but then they did. And anyhow, they gave it to the village corporation.
What would you like to see the corporation do with that land?
Well, they've already did. I think they're leasing out a lot of it to those different outfits. That's and they get a sum of money from Standard Oil, which the Navy used to get, and the Navy just turned it over to the village. I think it's $25,000 a month that they get from Standard Oil. Mm-hmm. Besides all the different rents.
But do you have any thoughts about how, if you were the president or the chairman of the board, what would you like to see the corporation do with the land?
Well, let's see. To keep it and rent it out and so forth, like they're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I don't know. There's a few little pieces that were sold right across the where the Unicy is, mm-hmm. that area. They had a sale there, and that was sold. Then they had nobody was interested much then.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next sale that they had a little later on was a lot of people were interested, but then they put a stop to that sale.
Mm-hmm.
So the Navy then gave the island to the Unalaska Corporation. Instead of giving it to the city of Unalaska, they gave it to the corporation.
Mm-hmm. You spent a lot of time away from Unalaska, traveling
oh, yes.
in the chain, and then you were in the lower mm-hmm. 48 for a while. Why did you come back?
Well, I came back accidentally, I think. You know, I got discharged from the Navy in New York.
When was that?
1919.
Oh, I see.
And when I arrived in Seattle, I had about $1 in my pocket. So I went and got a job, went down the waterfront and got a job on a vessel. I didn't know where it was going. It was coming to Alaska. And they were ready to sail, I went down the waterfront. I spent one night in Seattle, and I went down to waterfront here was a man in a white coat standing by the gangway. I talked to him, and he said, I'm waiting for a steerage waiter coming down from Union Hall. And we're sailing in 10 minutes, and if he ain't here, you can have the job. So I got the job. I thought I was going to wait on tables in the steerage, where the like a dormitory.
Yeah. The cheapest seats, is that
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Well, they had three sittings in the dining room for the passengers. Three sittings, that was nine meals a day, and they put me to work washing dishes in a little cubbyhole by the galley. And I worked from 4 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night washing dishes for about $1 a day. So I quit when we got the Kodiak.
And then made your way back here?
Oh, then I got on a wreck that was coming here. And, that's how I got here. Then I had relatives was in this Fox Island business, Fox Ranching Lucians. So I got in on that right now. So that was good.
You've had all kinds of jobs. What are the kinds of jobs that young people seem to be interested in today? I know that a lot of young people come and talk to you. What kind of opportunities would they like there to be here?
Well, I don't know. Most of them are interested in fishing. Which is about the only thing there is up here.
Is there any game on the island? Do people take any game on the island? Do they go hunting on the island?
No, well, there's only just foxes.
Ground squirrels?
Oh, yeah.
The only big game we got is probably sea lions.
Well, here was, foxes. And they're getting kind of scarce too now. And most of the islands were stocked with blue foxes, fox ranches. We got islands for $25 a year, lease from the federal government. And they were anxious to lease them, because to them it was just a bunch of garbage out here. They were not worth anything. And they discovered that the foxes were destroying the birds, so they got real interested then, which they were, because there used to be, I know Fox Islands that just lousy with birds, that when we put foxes on them, in about 2 years, a few birds that were left were nesting in the cliffs. Yeah.
Did you said that you were in the Navy? Were you in the Navy in the First World War?
Oh yes, before the war. I enlisted in the Navy in 1915.
I see.
In San Francisco. than we got in the World War in 1917. I didn't. School kids wrote
school
it.
Kids. Oh, that's a great story. Mm-hmm. Okay, I read it too. You buy the book down there, Kathy, Nikki. Mm-hmm. You must have done a lot of, you worked at a lot of these sailing schooners then.
Oh yeah, I was on that last sea otter hunt, 1910.
On that was the last sea otter hunt?
The last by vessels.
They have allowed you to hunt sea otters since that time, haven't they?
No.
Oh, I see.
That's when they were working on it to stop sea otter and fur seal hunting.
You mean the sea otters never came back to the point where they could hunt again?
They were always to the point where if they allowed the natives to hunt them, like, let's see, of course they were down. That's why they... like the fur seals and that went to Pribilofs, they were, getting way down low. All these Japanese, Canadian, Russian, and American seal hunters following the sheep, the fur seals from California all the way up. Then they'd get greedy and try to raid Pribilof Island. That's how those Jap schooners got caught. That's the one we went sea otter hunting in 1910. They caught three of them up there.
Three Japanese schooners?
Yeah.
But that was the last, 1910 was the last sea otter hunt.
They got special permission, and that is for locals. There was two vessels that hunted sea otters out of here. There was Applegate. He was old-time sea otter hunter. And then this one that I went in, it was Fred Schroeder in Dutch Harbor, that he bought the three Jap schooners. And the one that we went sea otter hunting on was the Kenzie Maru. Yeah, they changed the name to, what was it? Anyhow, they got caught at the Pribilofs. See, they had slow coast guard then, old Navy gunboats, burned coal, and they were kind of slow, and seal hunters could escape easy from them. But happened to be calm, so they couldn't, sails were no good, mm-hmm. So they got caught.
What would you say caused most of the changes, or what would you say was the most important factor in all these changes happening since then?
Well, let's see, up till the war, and then after the war, when the fishing industry started up here, canneries and crab fishing and so forth, and then the old style disappeared.
Do you think the fact that fishing is down right now, is having a hard time, is going to have an effect on Alaska?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I noticed there ain't money floating around like it was then. Like this year, there was no crab, and all these stations here closed up, and they caught their crab somewhere else on the floaters. Well, the city gets no share out the floaters, so the city is broke now. Where a few years back they were just rolling in it, just from the fishing industry.
And if the fishing industry doesn't pick up, what do you think will happen?
Well, there's the oil business coming in. I don't know what that'll do for here. And the fishing will probably pick up too.
It's hard to even get a market for that right now, so they don't even hardly do that, so a lot of it is being done, you know, just out on the sea instead of having to run the fish in here. And well, I think the king crab will come back, but it'll take a while.
What are people doing in the meantime?
I don't know, really. Let's see, I guess they're working at, you know, a few jobs, but you know, it's like he said, you know, they're just, you know, the money's not around anymore to, you know, the jobs are, there's not that many right now, but there is, you know, several jobs going on. But it's like, I hope the oil, you know, the business comes and maybe that'll help, you know, pick up again.
There was a time, I spent the time here in Dutch Harbor, when this king crab started. This Neil Thompson of Expansion, he was a mailboat runner and a captain. Then he started the fishing industry here, right?
Who's that?
Or Panalaskas, Neil Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
He's the one that started the fishing industry right here, and then it boomed after, you know, right off.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was working there, I made my few thousands, and I invested in them for a while. I drew it out, and I went to South Seas with them, but I drew out. That's why I'm still here. See, like an Aleut, as I'm wise to be around. I'm proud to be here to represent and talk from Nikolsky. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary, why don't you see if some of the other people would like to just add a few words, and we'll just we'll keep Mr. Swanson maybe at that chair for the time being. And,
is it all right if I walk down and have a coffee?
Sure, it's okay.
We own 100 shares on the corporation, right? And then we have this other 100 shares,
yeah.
Right? We can... Like when we make our will or something, we can make it out to whoever, and you know, whoever we want to.
Yes.
And when you do that, is it like you can will your will to like maybe 75 to, you know, someone and 25 to the other?
Sure.
Right. You can. When you do that, then that's when you're deceased, right? That's
well, you better
yes.
make the will before you're deceased,
yes,
but.
Uh-huh.
And here you've got somebody who can help you to do it.
Your other 100 shares can go to whoever you please.
Yep.
I see. I am Chugach Native Corporation, and my gram, you know, she willed her 100 shares to me. So that's two different corporations, right?
Yep.
And I wish they would send me Aleut Corporation, I think it is. Would send me notice and stuff like that, so I know what's going on. And I wish they would do that too in the future for the other kids, so you know, when they will get notices, you know, newspaper, and let them know what's going on. And I wish they could attend meetings, you know, like Aleut Corporation meetings, since I am 100 share holder. I have a right to go to attend their meetings, don't I?
Sure, well, I'm surprised you don't get notices if you're a shareholder.
I don't. You know, for the future, I hope they, you know, look into this and get, you know, whoever's deceased and that has, you know, wills or whatever, so they know what's going on with their corporation or their shares, when the meeting's going to be and where we're at. And
we had a member of the board of directors of the Aleut Corporation speak last night at Sandpoint, and he said that the next general meeting for the shareholders will be November 17th in Anchorage. So
in other words, I am a shareholder of, even if I am Chugach, I am Aleut Corporation also.
Sure.
Well, here's thing too now, like the Aleut Corporation, they have their office in Anchorage.
Right.
Sure, you get invitation to come to their meeting, but it'll cost you $1,000 to go there and back home again. So well, you don't go.
Has the Aleut Corporation ever had a shareholders meeting in Unalaska or in St. Paul?
Not that I know of. If you want to go to a meeting, you have to go to Anchorage. And you get invitation, sure, you to go to meeting, but it costs you about, let's see, it's, I don't know what it is now, but close to 400 just one way to Anchorage. Costs you about $700 just for an airplane ticket to go to this meeting.
Right.
We have the city lands person here. Maybe he can tell us something about the city and the land and the corporation.
Maybe something about Section 14C3, if that's...
Well, I don't know how much I can impart on 14C3. The city of Unalaska has received the reconveyance from the Unalaska Corporation under 14C3.
The 1,280 acres?
The 1,280 acres, yes. And now there are portions that the Unalaska Corporation is looking at. One in particular is that under 14C3, 5 acres which contain the cemetery was conveyed to the city. And now the Unalaska Corporation would like to possibly exchange 5 acres elsewhere so that the corporation and the native people may have their cemetery back. The question now that's being researched is, are we capable of going back